Morning, Adrian.
Morning, Howard. Come on in. We're very busy. I need to get this signal back.
And that was the first train of the day?
That was the first one, 9:45 Sheringham, 6619 on the front. That's an 062 wheel arrangement, freight engine, mainly dedicated to South Wales coal traffic up the valleys, down to the docks, GWR 1929.
So tell me about this box then, what you're doing, what's your job?
Well, I'm a long way from home. This is an LNER box, and I'm working it for, as a volunteer for the North Norfolk Railway. I'm just keeping my eye. He's clear of the track circuits. We can turn the road round for it. Let's give him number 9, bolt number 8, and signal number 3. Now he'll come back over the crossover. We're lightening the load of the train in platform 1 so that the little engine that's coming down next, another GWR engine, 5551, won't be overloaded for Kelling Bank, 1 in 80 incline. And this little 03 shunter, he's just going to take a carriage off.
How many levers you've got here to pull?
There's only about 15 or so. There's a lever frame is numbered to 31. There's 31 levers in the frame, but I don't know, you could count them up. There's a few white levers. They're dead. They don't do anything. I guess we've got 15 or 16 levers to muck around with. It's surprising what you can do with 15 or 16 levers, actually, if you've got the... And there goes the signal for him to go back into platform 1.
I must say, though, that it's quite a manual job. You're a bit out of breath doing all that.
Well, you would be doing it the way I'm doing it because you're stood in the way. I'm doing it in a very awkward manner.
You're leaping about the frame a bit more than a signalman would.
Yeah, I mean, normally you stand nice and square, straight behind the lever and pull it over, and it's no problem. You put the weight of your body on it and it comes over. But if you've got to stand the way I was standing just now, then it will be difficult.
And you've got to have your concentration with you at all the time.
Well, you've got to understand what it is you're doing. You need to know what each of these levers does out on the ground. I mean, this number 10 lever, that is the bolt, which is holding number 9, the point lever, in position.
So they're not all for signals. You've got signals, you've got points.
Points and bolts.
Bolts. Now, what's a bolt do?
A bolt holds the blades of the points in position and prevents them from moving while the train is passing over them.
So it's an extra safety.
Which is desirable.
Yes.
And until you've got your points bolted up properly, the machine, which is the locking frame here, the machine won't let you pull the signal. Because it says, no, the bolt's not proper. And if the bolt's not right, then clearly the points aren't right.
So this is like a mechanical computer, you would
say? It is. It's a Victorian logic machine. It's a mechanical computer. 1874 was the patent. And as I'm always saying to people, 2 and 2 makes 4 in any century. And once you've worked it out, there isn't anything else you can do.
And we say mechanical, but there is electricity involved as well, isn't
there?
Oh,
yeah. I mean, this frame, Sheringham, is completely electrical. It's fully track circuited. Here it is, look, on the diagram off the end of the platform.
And you've got this big diagram in front of you all the time with lights on it which show that where the train is or where the engine is.
And when that starts to move, then it comes forward and it occupies E-track. And E-track locks the points. You can't move the points when E-track's occupied because it applies to those points. And this is the electrical side of the locking. So it's a real belt and braces safety job. You'd have to work quite hard at doing anything wrong here. And in fact, conversely, if you work within the locking, you're not conscious that there is any locking. Provided you pull everything in a logical and proper manner, the locking... Well, because the locking says, that's fine, go ahead.
So the signals don't conflict with the points. And in effect, as long as you're doing things in the proper way, you're not going to have trains running into each other.
No, you aren't.
So what's happening now?
We've got a light engine coming in from a Weybourne shed. He's going to pick up the train on platform 1, which is the 10:30 from Sheringham. just put the signal back behind him and give him the next signal, one by one. And we're just dropping him into platform one under caution, and he'll be the 10:30 away.
So your engines, they're kept at a different place than Sheringham?
Yeah, they used to be kept in the yard here at Sheringham, but lighting them up in the morning creates an awful lot of smoke, unnaturally enough, of people said, oi, you know, because it was a bit much. And so they were all taken up to Weybourne, which is much better because there's nobody for a mile and a half or so. Put that one back. Go out and get the tablet off of him. He has brought the tablet through, and we give it to the machine to prove to the machine that the train has arrived. Hello,
Mark. Well, that was a lovely green Great Western engine, and we'll come on to the Great Western, I think, a bit later on. It's not an engine that would have been used originally in this part of the world. Now, let's explain this equipment that you're using now. And you use the word tablet. Explain what the tablet is.
This tablet is an aluminium disc. It's about 5 inches in diameter. It is engraved Sheringham Weybourne. So this is the permission for the driver, his permission and his guarantee of safety on the line from Sheringham to Weybourne. Not anywhere else. Sheringham to Weybourne.
And you can only have one of these tokens out of the machine at once,
The machine only dispenses one. And in order for either me or the man at Weybourne to get another one of these out, I've got to put this one in, because then the electrical contacts are made and the machine then understands that the line's perfectly clear and we can have another one. So I'm just putting it down into the drawer that delivers it to the interior of the machine.
And this is like another Victorian computer, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
It's a big green metal box.
Made of cast iron. It goes in. There you go. All in. All gone. Look, it's empty. Yep. It's gone up into the magazine. Give him one to get him out of his armchair.
In fact, that slot's a bit like one of the old-fashioned chocolate machines where you put your penny in to get a piece of chocolate out. And that's the signalman at the other end of the line communicating with you.
He answers me. He closes his drawer up because he had his drawer open because he had to pull a tablet out, you see. But, yeah, sometimes the railwaymen called these the chocolate box machines for that very reason. You pull this lever and you get the drawer out. No chocolate, unfortunately. What we've got to do now, the next thing you do, put the signal back. Now, we're clear now for a few minutes. But I must enter the times that all these transactions took place. I must put them in my train register. This is terribly important to keep the train register up to date with every bell code, the time of everything that you do should be written in here.
Time was very important for the railways, wasn't it?
Time.
And recording things.
Everything's got to be... I mean, if, God forbid, but should something go wrong, you do have a record of what had been happening.
This is like the black box that had
aeroplanes. I mean, this would have to go to the inquiry, you see. I could tell stories about how the train register saved me from error.
Time for a cup of tea now.
Time for a cup of tea. Have you got your tea bag out?
No, you better take that out of the cup.
Yeah, otherwise that would be a bit...
So a signalman's work then was lots of hard, frenetic activity for short bursts and then a bit of a rest in between. Is that how it worked?
No, it did work. It depends where you were, as I say. I mean, if you work on the main line, I worked Uffington, Challow, I've worked boxes at Oxford, worked boxes down in Somerset. They're all main line signal boxes, and it would be fairly steady. There were a group of signalmen who played chess. They had a wallet, and their little plastic chessmen with the symbol of the castle or whatever it is slipped into little slots, and when there was a moment they'd go on the phone and they say, have you made your move yet? And so they're working this busy box, but they're thinking chess as well,
playing long distance chess.
Long distance chess. Oh yeah, that was something. Bill Mattingly he was a warrant officer class one, so that's the equivalent of a regimental sergeant major, but he was in the RAF. And he did the Second World War in the RAF. I mean, Bill was no slouch. He taught me, mainly Bill taught me Challo signal box when I was a schoolboy, 63 levers.
Take me back, though, to when you were a little boy and your first memory of seeing the railway. What was that like?
Wow, Southern Railway. It was the Southern, because the Southern ran up past St. Peter's Road. It ran in a cutting, not so far from St. Peter's Road in early Reading. Went up the back of my auntie's house, and the engine struggling up the bank used to chuck smuts all over her washing. These smuts were going up about 100 feet into the air, because that was a deep cutting, and they came right up, and they all showered down as they went up the hill, showered on all the ladies' washing all up the hill. And this is during the war. And my sister, big sister, used to take me for walks. My dad was always shouting, "Get him out the house! Elizabeth, take him out the house!" So we would go to the playing field, and the railway actually ran through Solly Joel's playing field. So when we had to go on the swings, you used to go through a hole in the fence that had obviously made years ago to sit on the top of the bank and watch the trains. And then when we'd done that, we used to go to Early Station and a dear little signal box. And I would have been 3-4 years old and my sister would have been 7. That's it, yeah. And we always thought that signalman was called Mr. Early, because outside the signal box was this huge green and white sign saying Early. And we always called him Mr. Early. "Can we come up, Mr. Early?" And he never said no. I mean, you could go in. He only stood there and looked. You know, and then that was the absolute beginning. Right, we've got the engine just leaving the station. The train's leaving the station. And I'm going to walk outside now with the tablet, which is in its special pouch with a big hoop, so as to be able to hand it to the driver by him grabbing hold of the hoop as I hand it out to him. Here he comes. That's it, give it a stick.
And he caught it. What happens if he misses?
He has to stop. If he missed the tablet, he would have to stop and... I would probably run and pick it up and run up the track and hand it to him.
Does that ever happen?
Yeah, it happens occasionally. I say it's not very often, no. Now I'm going to give him 2 beats, and that means train entering section. Like that. And now Weybourne will acknowledge that, so I know he knows that train's coming towards him. The magic of a locomotive is the music. It's the rhythm. When they came through Reading on the Down Main non-stop, they're skimming the platform by 0.5 inch. They're doing 70 miles an hour and they're missing the platform by 0.5 inch. You've got 450 tons of train going doo-doo-dum, doo-doo-dum, doo-doo-dum. I mean, come on, it stands the hairs up on the back of your neck, and there's this beautiful Castle-class engine on the front, and its big end, as it winds the driving wheel round, its big end is flashing up and down by... No, amazing. And then the other thing, apart from, there's all that lovely excitement, noise, rhythm. And then, as the coaches clatter past, they used to have on their roof the destination boards. Now, that's pure stagecoach. That is to say, 18th century stagecoaches. And they said where they were going, and these wheels are going, dum, 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 and it said Paddington, Tenby and Pembroke Dock. Well, it's poetry, man. That's alliteration. Paddington, Tenby and Pembroke Dock. Brilliant. So, of course, naturally, you say, please, can I get on one of those engines? When the trains arrived at Reading, you could run along the platform. People used to obligingly get out of your way and watch the sliding under the boiler, the motion sliding. It was fascinating. And, of course, another thing that we had at Reading that was absolutely fascinating was the slip coach.
So now what's a slip coach?
Now, a slip coach, the guard pulls a lever and uncouples the coach from the train while it's still going along. The guard of the slip coach, there were 2 guards, a guard on the train and there was a guard on the slip coach. And the guard of the slip coach pulled a lever and it uncoupled the coach from the train. Now, at Reading, this was only done at 20 miles an hour. But at Didcot, they did it at 80, and that was something to watch.
And the purpose was so that passengers could travel by a fast train, and the train then didn't have to stop.
At Didcot, because the line was dead straight through the station for miles, I mean for miles back, this thing would come pounding up, doing his 75, 80 miles an hour. So the guard would have slipped his coach, well, back, I mean, a mile and a half. And the guard, without any steam at all, could take the brake back off again. I mean, they were ever so clever. But, of course, the Victorians sort of them, you know, and they're good. So he falls back away from the train, and he establishes a decent distance, and then he blows the brake off. So he's still doing 60, but the main train is away and he's gone and he's out the way and there's not going to be any problem. And then he goes... Dun, 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 dun. And so the main train goes whizzing through, and about 2 minutes later, there's this solitary coach comes through. Now, this is where the signalmen have to be very alert, because don't give train out of section until you've seen the slip coach.
Because you don't want something... coming
otherwise,
up running into the back
you
of it.
Clear the section and there's still a slip coach trundling along. And I mean, I think it's wonderfully gung-ho and terrific, but in half naughty, isn't it? I mean, really.
So we've established that you were attracted to this fascinating thing, the steam railway, in the 40s and the 50s.
Yeah.
How come you got a job on the railway?
Well, because it was all I was any good at. That's basically it. 11 and 31. I went in the army when I was 15, and I enjoyed the army, but the army was no good. I was never going to be a proper NCO, so I got out of it because I knew that where I ought to be was the railway. I understood it. I'd had loads of training. I'd been training for it for years. I knew the rules already. And you know, the men on that row, I mean, I don't know what the other row, I only know GWR, and I only know about Didcot, Swindon, Oxford, round there. But the men used to talk to each other about the rules. They used to quiz each other. But then again, we're talking 1950s. Most people never had a television. I mean, the interest was the work, because there wasn't a lot of distraction.
And you're talking about a railway that could stretch back into Victorian times.
Absolutely.
Stretch back to Brunel.
Yeah.
The way that they worked, they had a human connection to it, didn't they?
There was a direct line of descent. One of the porters on Challow Station, Albert Stanley, he had started at Dauncey in about 1919. And I said to him one day, I suddenly thought of this, I said, so if you started when you were 14... back in 1919, and the man that taught you how to be a porter, I've been working it out, Albert, he started in about 1880. I reckon the railway, the army, the police, the fire brigade, the National Health Service, all these, they're huge communities, and that's what kept it going. What kept it going was this comradeship. You didn't want to let your mates down. I'm sure, because I did do my 4.5 years in the army, so I have got some knowledge of it. And yeah, the regimental feeling. And for me, I really wanted to join another regiment. I wanted to join the railway.
And your first proper box then that you were actually paid money for working in was which one?
It was Uffington. And Uffington was terrific because we had the Farringdon branch.
And that's on that long stretch of railway, isn't it, between Didcot and Swindon, really classic
the
part
classic
of the Great Western.
Brunel's billiard table. We had this Farringdon branch, 3.5 mile single track. So it was absolutely wonderful because if I was on late turn, I started at 2 o'clock, I'd get to Uffington at 7 o'clock in the morning and catch the branch goods train with a pannier tank.
Take a ride on it.
Take a ride, and then you could say, could I have a go on the shovel? And, of course, a fireman was only too pleased. Well, very welcome here. You get on with it. But after a while, these guys got to know me, and he said, do you want to have a go, Jay? Do you want to drive it up there? And I must be one of the last people that's driven a steam engine on the Farringdon branch. It was wonderful. Oh, it was great fun.
We got something happening now.
Yeah, we got a train arriving. We got 6619... coming back, he's coming over the golf course level crossing now.
And you know that because you've got a light on your track circuit diagram.
The light, it's lit up. He's approaching the signal. There he goes. Look, he's just gone by the signal because the next track circuit light's lit up. So we can put this back behind him. Everything you do is actually in the rule book. The rule book says that the signal must be replaced behind the last vehicle of the train. And it was quite interesting for me as a little boy to realise that all what I picked up simply by watching was actually the men obeying the rules. When I started to read the rule book, it was all in the rule book. But it's the etiquette of how you're supposed to do these things.
And we're talking proper semaphore signals here, aren't we?
For
anybody who's a bit too young and thinks we're talking about lights, these are big mechanical arms, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right.
And we've got to come out now to get the token.
That's right. He's holding it out. The fireman is holding it out. And I will loop my arm through the hoop. Oh. Got it?
Yep.
Watch the doors as they go by. Make sure there's nothing wrong with the train. No signals of alarm in the case of a passenger train. No door handles that aren't properly turned. This is what the signalman must look for. Regulation 17. Now, we bring the tablet in. Here comes the drawer opening. Drawer's open. Tablet into drawer. Give him one on the bell, like that. He'll reply. Right, put the tablet in. Gone. There you go. And I give him one more just to let him know all is well.
I suppose the thing about the old railway was that you had this rule book, you had this tradition, you had this way of learning things from your predecessors that gave you the safety much better than any kind of automatic system would ever do.
Well,
they had their accidents, I suppose,
but they ran more trains.
It was a busier railway in those days.
I think that the automatic railway nowadays has a different kinds of trains, and maybe you don't need men every 2 miles washing the trains. I mean, I wouldn't like to be too hard on them, but I can remember at Port Talbot, there was an accident. The signal box had just been taken out of use because the automatic colour lights were now in use. And this particular day, there was a landslide and the cutting collapsed across the track. Now, if there had been a signal box there, that landslide would have buried all the signal wires that pull the arms. And he couldn't have pulled off if he'd have wanted to. But under automatic signalling, the train ran into it and the driver and the second man were killed. That was in 1967. So, I mean, you know, yeah.
Swings and roundabouts, I suppose, in the end, isn't it?
I didn't like automation because we had come out of this coal-fired, old-fashioned railway where there was always someone on hand, always. I went right through the changeover from this mechanical to automatic, and we had some awfully narrow escapes. They were ever so lucky they didn't get into trouble. I wrote it all up in books. I mean, it's too long to talk about.